continue our discussion that we began yesterday on Daf Gimel Amid Beis about how a person has to be very careful about the words he chooses to express things and not to say things that are bad tidings if he can avoid saying it. So we're here on Daf Dalet Amid Aleph on the top of the Amud, and the Gemara tells the following story. Rav, now we have to understand a little about the family history of Rav and about the fact that Kisolik Lahasam, that Rav came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. And Rav had an uncle by the name of Rav Chia. Rav's father's name was Aibo, who was Rav Chia's brother. They were brothers on the paternal side. They shared the same father. Now Rav's mother, whose name was Ema or Ima, she was a sister to Rabbi Chia. How so? Because they were sisters maternally. They shared the common mother. So Rav bar achua de Rabbi Chia ubarachte. Rav was the nephew of Rabbi Chia twice over. Once he was the son of Rabbi Chia's brother, and twice he was the son of Rabbi Chia's sister. Rabbi Chia's brother and Rabbi Chia's sister were the parents of Rav. Ki solik lahasam, when Rav came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Amalei, they didn't make those trips that frequently, so a long time had passed. And of course, Rabbi Chia hadn't seen his nephew to ask the question about how his brother and his sister are. So first, as soon as Rav gets to Eretz Yisrael, the question was asked, Aibu Kayam, is your father Aibo still alive? And Rav, in a sense, skirted the question. Amalei, Ima Kayemes? I mean, why are you asking me about my father, your brother? Ask me about my mother, your sister. Amalei. So Rav Chia probably understood that Rav was trying to skirt the question, because he didn't want to transmit bad news that Aibo, meaning Rav's father, who was Rav Chia's brother, had already passed on. So now Rav Chia says, Ima Kayemes, is your mother still alive, my sister? Amalei, Aibo Kayem? Wait a minute, did I answer your first question about Aibo? So that now Rav Chia got the message that both his brother Aibo and his sister Ima had both passed on. And that's what's called a Shmua Rechoka, which in Hilchas Avelos means that if 30 days have passed since the Ptira, then there's only a short Avelos, which is a one-day Avelos, instead of the longer seven-day Avelos. So Amalei L'Shamei, Rabbi Chia turns to his Hoizbach, as we call it in Yiddish, his shamish, and he says to him, Chalotzli min oli, take my shoes off. That's how an ovel is noeg avelus. It's one of the 11 prohibitions of an ovel. V'holech kelei achrayi lebeis hamerchatz. But on the other hand, take me now to bathe. Now we have to see why Rabbi Chia wanted to go into the beis hamerchatz exactly at that point, just moments after he had heard the bad news about both the passing of his brother and his sister. Shamet minot tlas. We derive three things from the story of Rav Chia. Number one, shma mina ovel osur ben ilas asandol. Since Rabbi Chia told his shamash to take off his shoes, apparently this is one of the suri avelus, which, by the way, is really derived from a pasuk in Yechezkel, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yechezkel at a certain point in his life, when Yechezkel's wife passes on, don't be noeg avelus. And amongst the things he tells him is unalecha tosim v'raglecha, meaning you should wear your shoes. And the Gemara in Moed Katan derives from that that an ovel is not allowed to wear shoes, but again, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu mandated Yechezkel at that particular point not to be knowing the veilus, therefore he told him to wear the shoes. And there are many, many other Yisurei Avil. So that's the first derivation from this story. Shema Bino, number two, Shmur Rechoka Eino Noheges Aliyom Echad Bilvad, that if 30 days have passed and then you find out about the Ptira, then is only one day of Avelus. Ushma Bino, number three, Mitzas Hayom Kekulo. The reason why Rabbi Chiya, now we understand, immediately went to the Beis HaMerchatz, when Rechitzah is one of the Yisurei Avils, he wanted to demonstrate to his Talmidim, who learned by watching his Maisim, that in fact, once a moment passes by, that's called Mitzas Hayom Kekulo, and he wanted to tell us halacha that would be relevant not just to a Shmua Rechoka, but even to a Shmua Krova. When a person ever hears of one of his seven relatives that passed on, there's halach on the seventh day of Avelus of Mitzas Hayom Kekulo. In the case of Shmua Rechoka, where there's only one day of Avelus, Mitzas Hayom Kekulo applies immediately after the Shmua. Now at this point, the Gemara, since it's talking about Minhagim and family relationships, it goes on to tell us something about Shvatim. Does a person have in his genes some personality traits that he inherits through the lineage from his Shvatim? Hahu Diomar, there was a person who always said, Dunu Dini. I don't want to listen to anybody. If I have any disagreement with someone, let's go to Beis Din and we'll listen to the Dayanim. They'll tell us. Amri, so the people said about this person, Shmamina Don Kaasi. He must be a descendant of Shevet Don. Tichsiv, because at the end of the Torah, Parshas Vayichi, the end of Bereishis, Yaakov blesses Don, and he says, Don Yadin Amo Keachad Shivtei Yisrael. In other words, a person is similar to his ancestors. In this case, he has some traits that he inherits from his Shevet. And the Shevet Don always is interested in Din, and they got a judgment in a court. Another story, Ahuda Havika Ozil Yomar, there was a person who always used to say, Achif Yama, Yama is the Yam, Asisni Birosa. Birosa is what's called in Hebrew an Armon. If I had the monies for it, I would like to buy a seaside house, a beautiful palace. Bodku Vashkechu, they checked him out and they found the Mishevet Zvulin Kasi, that he was a descendant of Shevet Zvulin, Tichsiv, about whom Yaakov Aminu blesses, Zvulin Lechof Yamim Yishkon. So Zvulin, they're the seafarers. The Gemara now has finally concluded, if you recall, that Orli Arbasa, the time for Bdika, is the night of the 14th. Vahashta de Kaimalon de Kulialma or Urtahu. Now that we've concluded that even Rav Huna, we thought Rav Huna held that the time for Bdika is the day of the 14th. No. Even Rav Huna agrees to Rabbi Yehuda, Orli Arbasa means the night of the 14th. Michdi, the Gemara says, Bein le Rabbi Yehuda, Bein le Rabbi Meir. Both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, who have a machlokas later on Daf Yud Aleph Amid Beis, about what amount of time did the Chacham make as a harchaka for the Isur Chametz, that you should start abstaining from Chametz, not having any Hanah from Chametz earlier than the time of the Isur. But everybody agrees that Chametz Eino Osur Ela Mishay Shol Sulamala, that Chametz becomes Osur on the 14th only at noon, midday, at the end of the sixth hour. And the Gemara, as we'll soon see, is going to derive this from a Pasuk Ach, Achilek, which splits the day of the 14th into two halves, is Heter, Chametz in the morning, and Isur Chametz in the afternoon. Or, from Losishkar ala Chametz dam Zivchi, that Chametz becomes Osir from the time of the Shechitas Karban Pesach, which is midday, is therefore Nivdok Beshis. The Gemara says, why are you imposing a Chiv Bdika on the night of the 14th? I mean, if you held like Rav Huna, the way we understood in the Havamina, that the time for Bdikas Chametz is the day of the 14th. Okay, so I could say, what hour of the day? We'll wait till the sixth hour when Chametz is Osir, and then we'll check the house and get rid of all the Chametz. But now that you've come to the conclusion that even Rav Huna agrees that the time for Bdikas is the night of the 14th, why? Why set up Bdikas so early when the Isur Chametz is not going to be Chal, not for another 12 hours, and not even from 12 hours, you're going to have to add another 6 hours. It's basically 18 hours early. V'chitei, maybe you'll tell me, Zrizim Akdimim L'mitzvahs. You know, today is the 14th of Nisan, and Hayom Ha'olech HaChalayla, the kickoff of the day of the 14th, is the night. Well, the earliest time on the 14th to start my mitzvah, because I'm very zealous and very excited about doing the mitzvah, my first opportunity is the night of the 14th. Gemara says, no, Nivdok Mitzafra. If the halach is Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs, and the mitzvah is Chal midday, then Zrizim would get up early in the morning, and with daybreak, they would fulfill that mitzvah, in this case, B'dikas Chametz. But there's no need to start the night before, and I'll prove it to you. Dechsiv, with regard to the mitzvah of Milah, the Torah says, Vayikru Yudbeis, Ubayom HaShmini, Yimol B'sar Olosso, V'sanya, we learned in the Braisa, Kol Yom Kulo Koshel Milah, Elish Zrizim Akdim L'kayim HaMitzvahs. In other words, we should wake up early to do the mitzvah of Milah on the 8th day of the child's birth. But we don't do the Milah before the 8th day, so on that day, and we have the entire day for Milah, we should do it at the earliest point in the day. Of course, if the guests can't come at that time, or the mole can't make it, he has many other brisim he has to go to, then we'll delay it. But if all things are ideal, we would start in the morning as early as possible. Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs. Shenemar. And now let's see, what is the source in the Torah itself for Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs? We're going to talk about Avraham Avinu going out to the Akedah. And this command was given to Avraham Avinu, but he wanted to go out as early as possible. Shenemar, because it says, Vayashkem Avraham Baboker. Now look, Avraham could have gone the night before. Let's say on a Sunday he got the tzivui of Espinchas Yechidcha. He could have gone on that very day out to look for HaMakom, the place for the Akedah. He didn't have to wait till the next morning, but he waited till the next morning. Which means that if he didn't start going out L'Hakdim Alayla, it means that Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs tells you to get up as early as you can in the morning. Why then is B'dikas Chametz as early as the night before? You can't justify that by quoting the halacha of Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs. That wouldn't be enough. Now, Tosus points out over here that we have to be very careful. The pasuk Vayashkem Avraham Baboker actually appears twice. It appears once with regard to Sodom. And the Torah tells us that when Sodom was destroyed, it says Vayashkem Avraham Baboker. But the Gemara actually says, and if you take a look at Tosus, Divra Maskel Shenemar, so it seems that Avraham Avinu didn't want to go out at night because the Talmud Chacham should not go out at night. But this has nothing to do with Zrizim Akdim L'mitzvahs. It could be that if you have a mitzvah like B'dikas Chametz, which is in the house, then maybe you could start with the night. Only in the case of Avraham Avinu, where he was he had to go out, then he didn't go out at night for another reason, because you don't go out at night. That's a principle for a Talmud Chacham. There are too many mazikin around. Shlomar Hacha Mucha Mikra De Akeda. This is not the pasuk of Avram going out to see the destruction of Sodom, because there Avram Avinu went out alone. He was unaccompanied, unescorted, and therefore he couldn't go out at night. But we're talking about the Akedah. In the case of the Akedah, he had both of his Na'arim with him, so he was accompanied by others. He could have easily have gone out at night, and yet, Vayashkem Avram Baboker. Not only that, you may say, well, he couldn't have gone out at night for the Akedah because of Mazikin. We have a principle called Shluchei Mitzvah Yidin Mizakin. Now, it's interesting, in the case of Sodom, why did Avraham Avinu go out alone? He didn't want other members of his entourage to see the destruction of Sodom. That might have shooken them up tremendously. And who knows what kind of doubts they could have had in Amunah and Hashem or so. But in the case of the Akedah, where he went out with his Na'arim, and it was for a Dvar Mitzvah, there was no reason that Avram should have been inhibited about going out at night. But the answer is because Rizam Akdila Mitzvahs begins in the morning. So once again, we're back to square one. We don't understand why Bedikas Chametz is at night. I have two reasons why the Rabbanan enacted the obligation of Bedika to be implemented at night, the night of the 14th. One is because at night people are home, and Bedika is a mitzvah that we do vis-a-vis the house, so we want to make sure everyone's around during the day, you know, until you find people, they're out at work. And number two, the mitzvah Bedika, which the Gemara is going to derive from Psukim, is with a ner. And a ner doesn't help you during the day. In fact, it might even be negative. So when is a ner good and helpful, effective for Bedika? That's at night. Now, it's interesting that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak gives two explanations as to why Bedika is at night. According to the first explanation, you could actually have started Bedika before nightfall. People are already home a little bit before nightfall. They don't want to be in those days out in the streets when it's dark. And that's called Derech B'nei Odom Likanes L'Bateyam B'Od Yom. They come back early. And that would mean that as far as the Takana of Bizman Sheh B'nei Odom Motzi B'Teyam, you could have started the B'dik even before nightfall going into the 14th. But we have now a second reason, and that is Or Haner Yafal Bedika. So don't start before nightfall because we want the Ner to be effective. And truth is that from the perspective of the second reason of Nachbar Yitzchak, namely Or Haner Yafal Bedika, it would make no difference whether you start the Bedika with nightfall or through any time throughout the night. The candle is always effective. But that's why Rav Nachman needs the first reason, namely that B'nai Odom Mitzuyim Boteya, because that applies specifically to the beginning of the night. So that's the proper time for Bedikas Chametz. In fact, it's very interesting. The Ravid on the Rif in the back of the Gemara, he says that the reason why the Mishnah chooses the word R is not only because of Lashon Nikia, a euphemism as we discussed yesterday, but also because it's when there's still a little bit light out. In other words, at the very beginning of the night, when B'nai Odom Mitzuyim Boteyam, that's when you should embark on the Bedika. Amar Abaye, Hilchach, now that you've decided that the real proper time for Bedika is the beginning of the night, don't delay until later, because that's the time when, as we said before, Shosh B'nai Odom Mitzuyim Boteyam, therefore, Hai Tzurmi Mirabonon, a scholar, a Torah scholar, that he has a kvius, he always has a shir at that particular time. You know, at the end of Bein HaShemashes, on every night. Lo lift up Idne. In the night of the 14th, he should give up on his kvius. Don't start learning Torah. Why? Because Biurta de Tlesen Nagar Basa Dulum Moshe Le Shmaita Toviosilim Nuemi Mitzvah. He might be Nimshach, he might expand his learning and get very profoundly involved in his studies. And when he does so, he may forget to do the Bedikas Chametz. You know, he's so used to that learning at that time, and the learning is very profound. He's a Talmud Chacham. And the Ritva points out that we're talking only about a Limud Be'iyu, not a Limud Baroi. It's a very deep learning. And the Me'iri adds that how much more so he shouldn't start a meal because he might forget Bedikas Chametz. Now again, it's hard to believe that he would forget Bedikas Chametz throughout the night, but he would finally get around to Bedikas Chametz when it's later, and he shouldn't be delaying Bedikas Chametz. As we said before, we want to start the Bedika immediately with nightfall. Boy, me name Rav Nachbar Yitzchak. The suffix was raised in front of Rav Nachbar Yitzchak, Hamaskir Bais L'Chavir Bar Bosar. Al mi livdok. Who should be making the Bedika? There's a maskir and a socher. There's the owner of the house, and there's the renter. Alamaskil livdok, perhaps the owner of the house should make the Bedika, despite the fact that the rental agreement goes into effect on the 14th of Nisan for the balance of Pesach, and the maskir will not be in the house during the course of the Pesach. But nevertheless, the chamir didehu, he owns the chametz. If there's any chametz in the house, it doesn't belong to the renter. He didn't even have the opportunity to bring chametz into the house. So that according to this, let's say if you rented a hotel room, then the hotel would be in charge of checking and making sure there's no chametz. Odimo, should we say ala socher livdok? Why? Because the socher is going to be living there for the 14th and beyond. All the issues of maybe he'll come to eat chametz will apply to him. It doesn't matter whose chametz it is. Maybe it's not the socher's chametz, it's the maskir's chametz, but nevertheless, it's the socher who might have access. It might inadvertently forget about Pesach and eat the chametz. Is the isur b'shusay kai? The isur is in his rishus. That's where he's living. He's the one who should do the bedika. And the Pnei Yeshua says that since the bias is omed l'shusa l'chol tashmishav harei mischayav b'bedikaso. In other words, even though he doesn't have legal absolute ownership over the house, but he does have, as a renter, legal rights to use the house, and in that sense, he is also considered a bialim. To some extent, he is also an owner of the house. The Rashash here is famous for saying, and other Achronim agree with him, that the Suffolk really depends on a machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos at the very beginning of the Masechta on Daf Beis. Rashi says the purpose of Bedika is so that he shouldn't violate Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotz, if he owns any chametz. Tosfos says the purpose of the enactment of Bedika is Shamayovel Yochlo, that he shouldn't come to eat it. If it's Rashi, Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotz, then the first side of the Gemara is right, and the maskir has to do the Bedika because Chamir Didehu, it's his chametz. But if on the other hand you go with Tosfos' Shita, that the purpose and the goal of Bedika is to prevent Achila, then it makes sense that the socher should be chayev because isurei b'rishusei koi. Toshma. Let's see if we can answer this question by quoting a brisa. The brisa says, "Hamaskir b'ayis l'chavero ala socher lasos lo mizuzah." The Gemara is assuming now an analogy between our case of Bedikas Chometz with a maskir and a socher and the case of mizuzah and a maskir and a socher. Who's obligated to put up the mizuzah? In both Bedikas Chometz and Mezuzah, this is the lowest common denominator between the two, we have a Chovas Bias, an obligation vis-a-vis the house. Well, who's the real Baal HaChiyuv, upon which the Chiyuv vis-a-vis the house reflects, it there is a reflect on the Maskir of the Socher? And the Brisa says, Ala Socher Lasos Mezuzah. The Socher is enjoying the benefit of living in the house, he's rented the house, he's the one who has to put up the Mezuzah. It means a Chovas Bias Muteles is imposed on the renter, the one who's living in the house, not on the owner of the house, the legal bialim of the house. So the Gemara rejects this and says, no, there's no proof. Chosam ha'omar of Misharshia, mezuzah chovas hadorhi. The obligation of mezuzah is incumbent on he who lives in the mezuzah, in the house. And this is derived from the pasuk Al mezuzos beisecha, beisecha hainu biyasecha. He who goes in and out of the house. Rashi says that the mezuzah will protect you, and therefore, if you're living in the house, you're the one who's the chovas hadar, you have to put up the mezuzah. Aval hacha, here in the case of chametz derabanan, I don't know if chachamim impose the chiyuv on the maskir or the socher. In the case of mezuzah, I understand very well it's the socher who's obligated to mezuzah because he's biyoscha, he's the one who goes in and out of the house, he needs the mezuzah more than the maskir, the owner of the house. But in the case of bedikas chametz, where the maskir is the one who owns the chametz, the reason why we're looking for this chametz is because the maskir brought that chametz into the house, maybe chachamim impose the chiyuv bedik on the maskir. We're going to derive the conclusion here on your question from a brisa. The brisa says, "Amaskir bayis lechaveru iman shalom masalom avtechos chalar basar." If the maskir is still holding on to the keys and he hasn't transferred the keys over to the socher, to the renter, and it's already the 14th of Nisan, so when the chiyuv of bedika emerged with nightfall on the 14th, the socher had no access to the house. He may have had legal rights by virtue of a contract as a socher, but he didn't have the keys, so he didn't have access. And therefore the maskir is chayv in bedika. But if mishem masalom avtechos chalar basar, if the maskir has already transferred the keys over to the socher before nightfall of the 14th, so when the chayv bedika emerges, it's the socher has access, he's got the keys, ala socher livdok, he's obligated in bedikas chametz. And this is going to be the final conclusion of the Safek, based on this Brais. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak concludes that the Chi of Bedika depends upon who has the Maftechos. Now, Rashi seems to interpret this sugya, and Tosus objects that Mesiris Maftechos is the Kinyan. That's what clinches the Kinyan Schirus. Tosus objects because he finds many cases where the Kinyonim in Karka, because Schirus is on a piece of land, is effectuated by Kesef, or by Shtar, by Chazaka, but not by Maftechos. We never found anywhere in Shas, in the Bavas, that Mesiris Maftechos is a Kinyan. So how does Rashi know it's a Kinyan Sechiris? Tosa says that there was a Kinyan that was made, but now it depends on who has access to the house, and therefore to the Chavetz in the house, and that depends upon Mesiris Maftechos. So that's the way Tosfos learns the sugya. It's not a kinyan mesiris maftechus, but it is a form of having access and therefore of being chayev in bedika. Okay. On the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, we are up to the Gemara of Boy Minei Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Okay then, so you'll count up approximately 7 lines from the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Fascinating suffix. And this has repercussions in many different areas of halacha. Hamaskir Bayis L'Chaver Bar Bosar. A person rents a house on the 14th. Rashi interprets on the 14th in the morning. So at the night of the 14th, when the Chi of Bediki emerged, there was no Kenyan Schiris. Cheskos of Boduk or Ein Cheskos of Boduk. Does the Socher who rents the house have the right, within the bounds of Halacha, to assume that the maskir fulfilled his obligation and implemented the bedika? In event that the maskir did not fulfill his chiyuv bedika, maybe he was called on a very emergency trip or operation, then the socher has to do the bedika, even though his rental agreement emerged on the 14th by day. Nevertheless, he has to do bedika. So the Gemara says naively, "Lamai nafkemina, what's this big deal? L'shailei. We can trust the maskir. Let's just call him up on the phone and ask him, my friend, you were obligated to bedika. Did you fulfill your obligation?" And the poskim learn a very profound conclusion here from this gemara of l'shaile, which means that even if you have rights to assume, in the case of the socher, that the maskir did the bedika, don't rely on circumstantial evidence, on any assumptions. Why? Because he's available. If he's available, ask him. And this has repercussions in Yoredeya and laws of mixtures, that even though it's a suffix and you could be lenient in the suffix, nevertheless, if there's an opportunity to check it out and know for certain, that's what you have to do. So the Gemara answers, the lesser lahai deshlui, the maskir, the owner of the house, is out of town and there's no internet access, you know, you can't WhatsApp him, and therefore we have no way of asking him. La truchi lahai mai. Should we impose upon the socher the obligation, the tircha, to go through the bedika? Or can he rely on the assumption that the maskir is a good guy, he obliges the halacha and fulfills its requirements, and he did the bedika? Amalu Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak tenisuha. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak again quotes a braisa to answer this question, as we saw before. That's the pattern. The Braisa says, "Hakol nemonim al bir chametz." Anyone is believed to testify on the 14th of Nisan that the bedika was done last night, on the night of the 14th, properly by the owner of the house. And afilu noshim, afilu avodim, afilu ktanim. So I'm coming into this house. I don't know if the owner of the house implemented his chiyuv bdika. And all I have to do is ask his wife. I have to ask one of his avodim, one of his ktanim. And the Gemara asks, my time in mehemni. I understand that you could believe an eved. He's a mature person. I understand you could believe an isha because eidechanem bisurin. A woman is believed in Isurim, so I certainly could trust her word that the Bedika was implemented. But Ketanim? Ketanim are Enam B'nei Edus. They're not included in Edus. Even in Isurim, we don't rely on the testimony of Ketanim. And here we turn to Daf Dalid Amid Beis. The Gemara says, Lav Mishum, the only reason I could justify why the Braisa relies on a Katan to testify is Mishum Dechezkaso Badu. We have to assume that the maskir, the owner of the house, with the emergence of the night of the 14th, did exactly what the halacha requires of him. And therefore we have a chazaka that we can assume and rely that he did the bedika. Otherwise we can't rely on a katan. Katan is a lab b'nei edus. And now Rav Nachbar Yitzchak coins a very important principle. Hakol chaverim heme etzel bedikas chametz. We have a halacha of a chaver. I don't know if any of you have seen the Yeki Minog that sometimes they call up a person of the Torah, they call him HaChaver. The word Chaver is not a friend, although it's a friend of God, but what it means, a Chaver is someone who's very careful and meticulous about mitzvahs. We rely on him totally and always assume that he fulfilled his mitzvah. For example, in Truvas HaMaisris, we buy from a Chaver grains. We assume that he already took off Truvas HaMaisris. And Hakol chaverim hem etzel bedikas chametz. Bedikas chametz is such an exciting mitzvah that happens once a year that everybody is considered a chaver. Desanya. Now let's understand the source of the word chaver and where it applies in its original form. Chaver shemes. Someone who has a chazok as a chaver. He's very meticulous about fulfilling the law. And he died, v'niach megura malea peros. He left a whole volume of peros, of grains, and we don't know if he was mafresh before he died. Is afilu heim b'nei yoman. Even today they did the meruach, the winnowing, and the chiv maser emerged on this day, the very day that this chaver died. Harei b'cheskes misukanim. We have every right to assume that the chaver implemented his obligation. He was mafresh chumas of maestris, and this is called chazok al chaver she'ena meniach dover she'ena mesuka mitachas yodo. He would never leave something that could possibly trip someone up, and chas v'shalom, a person would rely on him that he took off maser, and in fact he didn't, and then you're eating tevel, which is the chiv misa b'dei shemayim. No, a chaver is reliable. So in Bedikas Chametz, the Gemara says, HaKol Chaver makes a Bedika, we can always assume that a person fulfilled his obligation of Bedika, because everybody's considered a Chaver when it comes to Bedika. So the Gemara says, Umimai, how do you know from this price, Rav Nachman, that you derive the conclusion that everyone's considered a chaver, and everyone has a cheskes baduk, and therefore the socher can assume the maskir fulfilled his obligation. Dilma shani hocha, maybe the braisa is different. Mishum de ka'amri hani. Because we have the testimony of noshim avodim ketanim. Maybe we're relying on their testimony. So Gemara says, what kind of question are you asking me? Otu amira dahani midi mishosha isbe. Does the statement and the testimony of these, meaning these ketanim, have any value to them? Elamai, okay, so let's go back to your understanding, Rav Nachman. The Chezkaso Baduk, we can't rely on the child at all, that's meaningless, but the bias has a chazaka, and we presume it was already checked because Hakol Chaver Meitzel Bedik is high, Hakol Nemonim, so why does the bias say that we believe them? It should have said, Kol Abatim Chezkas Bedukim Be'ar Basar. That every bias on the 14th, meaning on the morning of the 14th, Erev Pesach, has a chazok of being baduk. We don't need nemanus here. We're not going to invite the child to tell us, well, did Tati do his bedikah or not? Mibayle, that's what it should have said in the Braisa. Why is the Braisa confusing us by phrasing it as Hakol Ne'emanim? Hakol Ne'emanim means there's an Ne'emanus here. It's not because of the Chazaka, but it's because of the Ne'emanus. Elamai. So now I'm going to go back to you. Rav Nachman is now putting the ball back into the court of the Makshan. He says, how do you understand this? You're being very difficult with me. Mishum Amir Dahani. Are you telling me that Hakol Ne'emanim should be taken literally, and we're going to rely not on Cheskas Baduk and Hakol Chaver Meitzel Bedikah, but rather on their testimony? Halo Amri Hani Lo. So then you're going to tell me that if we didn't have their testimony, again, we still haven't really addressed the main question here, what is the testimony of a child worth? But if you're arguing that the Amira Dahani is what we're relying on, meaning we're not relying on Cheskes Baduk and Chaver, but rather on their testimony. So then you're implying that Holo Amri Hani, according to the Braisa, if there was no testimony, lo, then the Socher is going to have to do the Bedika, and he has no testimony to rely on, that the Maskir indeed fulfilled his obligation. Is Tifsho Minei, the Ein Cheskos Baduk. So your argument is that there is no Cheskes Baduk. And throw out this principle of Hakol Chaver Meitzel Bedikas Chametz, we need their testimony. My friend, that's impossible. Why? Because if there's no Cheskas Baduk, then you're relying on the testimony of a child? The Gemara says, Lo, li olamei melecho Cheskas Baduk. I must assume Cheskas Baduk. Now if you'll ask me, if Cheskas Baduk, so what's the Hakol Ne'emanim? Forget about Hakol Ne'emanim. We don't have to call them up and ask them, did Tati do a bedika? Did your husband implement his chiyuv? Because Cheskas Baduk, Hakol Chaver Meitzel Bedika. Gemara says, Hachamai Eskin, de Muchzaklon, de Lo Badak. What the subject of the Braisa is a case where the husband, the Balabayis, the Maskir, had to check out on an emergency flight to Acapulco, and he had no possibility, no time, or opportunity to fulfill his chiyuv bedika. Uka Amri Hani, and these are the ones who testify, Badkine, we did the bedika. Our father, our husband, commissioned us in his absence to fulfill the bedika. Mao de Tema, I might have thought, if not for the Braisa, de lo him lehem ninu. We, the Rabbanan, should not believe him because, you know, you're talking about a katan. A katan is not reliable. And who says his bedika was reliable? Kamash malon, the chiddush of the Braisa is kevan the bedika chametz min Rabbanan, who the whole enactment of bedika is a requirement that was established by the chachamim. These are some of the most important words in Masechet Pesachim. So my friends, get it down now. Then on a deraisa level, you don't have to get rid of your chametz, because the Torah relies on bittul. Rashi here quotes the entire nusach of bittul, that a person says, that kol chamir disa v'shusi, I know about it, I don't know that any chametz that I have is batul ki afra di'arit, it should be like the dust of the earth. And the Torah relies on bittul. Again, how bittul operates, maybe we'll see tomorrow, but that's bittul. So the requirement of bedika is a rabbinic enactment. And therefore, since b'daraisa b'bittul ba'al masagile, it would suffice, hemnu rabbanon b'rabbanon. The rabbanon are allowed to believe whoever they want to believe. And in this case, even though a katan is not trusted on a daraisa level, but vis-a-vis the mitzvah derabbanon, they said that we could rely on the katan. So again, we're arguing now that really Cheskas Baduk, the exception to the rule of Cheskas Baduk, is when the socher knows that the maskir had an emergency call, he was out of town, he couldn't have possibly implemented the bedika. But the Bryce wants to tell us that even in that extreme case, if there are those members of the family or the household who testify about themselves that they implemented the bedika, we rely on them. Even though on a deraisa level, let's say, for example, for Trumas and Maisras, or for any other Heftad Isura, we would not rely on their testimony. Certainly not that of a Katan, but here, Hemnu Rabbanan bin Rabbanan. And in the language of Chazal, this is called Hemamru Vehemamru. They instituted the obligation, they could determine when the applications and the Nemonos and so forth with regard to that. Now that you've told me that the socher has every right to assume that the masker fulfilled his obligation, but mitzo sheinu bodu, he comes into the house after the rental agreement is implemented, and the renter finds that there's chametz all over the place. Obviously, the masker did not fulfill his obligation, and he throws the ball into my court. Says the socher, mau mi avi mekach tos. Socher says, wait a minute. When I paid you a certain price for Pesach, I didn't mean that on Erev Yontif, when I come in with my family and my little kids, I got to run around doing a bedikah. I mean, that I want my money back. The deal is off. Olo, or shall we say no? You know what? Mr. Socher, Mr. Renter, go ahead and do the bedikah. Toshma, the Yom Rabbaye. Abaye says, Lo mi boy bi asra de lo yahavi agro bodku. Abai says that there are two different customs that are prevalent amongst the cities. There are cities in which you pay for someone to do bedikah, and there are cities in which a person who volunteers to do your bedikah for you will not take any money for it. He says it goes without saying that in a city where the minig is the lo yavi agra ubodko, that they don't pay money for someone to do a bedikah, because everyone does his own bedikah, and if somebody offers and volunteers to do a bedikah for someone else, he's not going to get paid for it. He's doing a mitzvah. He doesn't want to get paid for the mitzvah. So then for sure, this is not a mekach tos, because you cannot put a price tag on bedikah's chametz. If the socher says, well, I rented the house, now I got to do bedikah, you know, subtract X amount, a certain percentage, you know, more than 16% of the value of shtus, and therefore it's a mekach tos, I want my money back. There's no price tag on bedikas chametz. If I do bedikah on your behalf, I don't get paid for that. Nichale le'inish le'kiyume mitzvah begufe. Abai coins a very important phrase. A person would rather do a mitzvah with his own body. And therefore, you know, Mr. Socher, In a paradoxical sense, the masker gave you a great opportunity that now you could go ahead with your goof and fulfill the mitzvah b'dikah. El afilu, says Abai, b'asur diavi agro bodku, even in a place where the custom is that a person charges you if he does your b'dikah, it's like a cleaning service. So therefore, the socher now, if he would have to hire this cleaning service to do his b'dikah, he'd have to shell out from his pocket. Nevertheless, says Abai, it's not mekach tos. The nichle le'inish l'kiyume mitzvah b'mamone. If a person cannot be matriach himself begufe and do it physically, the mitzvah will be done by someone else and he'll pay for it. And that's also nichle. That's also something that a person would want to do. This Gemara, by the way, has implications about barring people's tefillin and things like that. Because how do I know that you would agree if I come into shul and I need a pair of tefillin? I know that you davened in the early minyan, you were up for vasikin, but maybe you don't want me to use your tefillin. But we have a principle, says Abai, nichale le'inish le'eved mitzvah b'mamone. A person wants a mitzvah to be done even with his mom. Tanan hasam. Now we referred earlier to a mishnah later on in Daf Yud Aleph that codifies the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer Ochlin Kol Chamesh V'Sorfim B'Tchilas Sheish. We're going to allow you to eat, let's say on a perfect day, so the fifth hour is from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. The sixth hour is from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. So according to Rabbi Meir, already at 10 a.m. we have to discuss whether or not you're allowed to continue eating chametz, even though it's 2 hours before the Shas Isur chametz. And Rabbi Meir is lenient and he allows you to eat chametz. But when we get to the beginning of the sixth hour, which is 11 a.m. on a perfect clock, then you have to burn your chametz, get rid of your chametz. So it means we give you that 1 hour of a buffer zone because the Rabbanan are afraid you might get a mistake in 1 hour. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ochlin Kol Arba. We're going to allow you to eat chametz until the beginning of the fifth hour. However, tolin kol chametz, during the fifth hour, which is from 10 to 11 a.m., we want you to be toler the chametz. In other words, we're not going to demand that you burn the chametz. If you want, you can feed it to your dog, and you can have hanah from it. You can still sell it to a guy. And then sorfim b'tchilas shesh. Then when we get to the beginning of the sixth hour, we have to get rid of the chametz. Says the Gemara, "Dekuli alma miyah chametz mishesh osur lemala osur." Everyone agrees that when the sixth hour comes around, which is 11 a.m. in a perfect day, you have to get rid of your chametz. Minola, what's the basis for this? Certainly you're assuming that a person might make a mistake of 1 hour. Okay, make a mistake of 1 hour. But he has all the time in the world. I mean, it's 6 hours until sunset. Why do we assume that a person is obligated to get rid of his chametz midday, at noon, and then we're going to be marchik you with a derabanan 1 hour? Or maybe even 2 hours. Omar Abaye, Trey Kroik, Sivi. There are two psukim with regard to chametz. And this combination of these two psukim is going to shed a light on when is the time for destroying the chametz. Ksiv, it says in one pasuk, all these psukim are in the 12th chapter of Shmos and Parshas Bo. Shivas yomim si orlo yimotzi vatecha. For 7 days you cannot have chametz in your possession. Uksiv. On the first day of Yontif, get rid of your chametz. Haketza. This is an absolute head-on collision. You can't tell me that I'm going to get rid of my chametz on the first day of Yontif and then turn around and tell me that chametz can't be found in my possession for 7 full days. Because if lo yimotzei shivas yomim, it means that before the 7th day, I already got to get rid of my chametz. Now you tell me, ach b'yom harishon tashbisu, on the 1st day, get rid of your chametz. And Abai's answer is, l'rabos arbos or l'biu, that when the Torah says, ach b'yom harishon, on the 1st day, it doesn't refer to the 1st day of Yontif, but that b'yom harishon is the day before 7 days of Pesach. In other words, Abai is saying that we have no choice. Our back is against the wall. We cannot interpret the pasuk Ach b'yom harishon literally as if the Torah is telling me get rid of your chametz on the 1st day of Yontif. The Torah itself says that lo yimotzi v'tech v'shivas yomim, it's not in your house. So it must be that the words b'yom harishon don't refer to the 1st day of Pesach. They refer to Yidalid, to guarantee that Shivas Yom Lo Yimotzei Vatechem, already on the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, you have to get rid of your chametz. So Gemara says, V'ema, maybe what the Torah means to say is L'rabos Lele Chamisha Sar Lebir. Maybe the pasuk by saying that Ach Bayom HaRishon is coming to teach us that even the night of the 15th, what we call Seder night, even that enjoins us from chametz, from having chametz in our possession. Why would I subtract the night? I mean, the Torah had to go out of its way to say b'yom harishon, to indicate that even the night is also in chametz, in Bal Yoreh Bal Yimotzeh. Salkit Haitecha Mina, the Gemara says, I would have thought that it says in the Pasuk Shivas Yomim, and since Shivas Yomim Ksiv, with regard to Bal Yomar and Motzei, the Torah emphasizes Yomim, is Yomim in Leilos Lo. Very strange halach. If you're learning Zmanim, Seder Zmanim, this is a very odd kind of halach, but the Gemara raises the possibility that we should separate between the days of Yontif and the nights of Yontif. And who says that on the night of Yontif, any night during Yontif, I'm not allowed to have chametz? The Torah says Shivas Yomim. Is Yomim in Leilos Lo Kamash Malon? That's what the Torah means when it says by Yom HaRishon, the entire day Yom HaRishon, Afil Leilos, that you have to get rid of your chametz so that you don't have chametz in your possession even at night. So all the nights are prohibited because it says by Yom HaRishon. By Yom HaRishon encompasses the entire unit of a day. A halachic day begins at night. And therefore, you got to get rid of your chametz immediately at nightfall of the first day of Yom Tov. Now, we still have a problem over here, because the Torah says you cannot have chametz in your possession for 7 days. So how can we possibly postulate that you have to get rid of your chametz at the beginning of the night of Shivas Yomim? You already then have violated the Isur of Lo Yimotzi Vatechem. So apparently, we have to differentiate between what's called the Maisa Mitzvah and the Kiyuma Mitzvah. You're going to have to do the Maisa of getting rid of the chametz right before nightfall, but you'll fulfill the mitzvah with nightfall. So Gemara says, Ahulo Itzterchle, you're making a big mistake. Because the Pasuk did not have to teach me night. I can definitely understand without the Pasuk and the Ribui in the Pasuk that the night is included in the Isur Chametz. And here, Rabbi Yosef, we're going to turn to the Afayim and Aleph, which is very good news, because this will give us a little bit of an opportunity, perhaps, to get in the Daf for Shabbos, if we're a little bit ahead of ourselves. So the Gemara says on the top of the Afayim and Aleph, Da iskish hashpos asiyor le'achilas chametz. Le'achilas chametz, le'achilas matz. So we have a triple hekesh here. A equals B, and B equals C. With regard to Hashpasa Siyar, Lachilas Chametz, the Torah says get rid of your Chametz when you're not allowed to eat the Chametz. The Ksiv, it says in the Pasuk, Shivas Yomim Siyar Liyamotzev Techim Ki Kol Ochel Machmetzes V'Nichrasa. So in one breath, the Torah combines the Iser of Bal Yimotze, getting rid of your Chametz, together with the Iser Achil of eating Chametz. And Achilas Chametz is Lachilas Matzah. There's a hekesh between the Iser Chametz and the Mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. The Chsiv, the Torah says in one pasuk, Kol Machmetzes Ol Sochelu B'Kol Moshosechem Tochlu Matzes. So it means that whenever you have an obligation to eat matzah, you have an Iser that enjoins you from eating Chametz. And whenever there's an Iser of eating Chametz, then we've learned from the first Hekesh, there's already a Balyur of Bayim Matzah. Now, when is the mitzvah of matzah? Ksiv bey, with regard to matzah, erev toklu matzahs. So the night of the 15th is the night that obligates you in eating a matzah. So just like you're obligated in eating matzah on the night of the 15th, ipso facto, you're enjoined from having chametz. And if you're enjoined from eating chametz, then you're enjoined from even owning chametz. Hence, I already derive from this series of hekesh that on the night of the 15th of Nisan, you are enjoined from owning chametz. I don't need Bayom HaRishon as a ribui to include the night. But the Gemara says, the Ema, perhaps Yom HaRishon, is Kamila Rabos Leil Arboso Lebir. Maybe Bayom HaRishon, if you're telling me we can't take it literally, as if to say you'll get rid of your chametz on the first day of Yom Tov, so why do you tell me that you have to get rid of your chametz the night going into the 15th? Maybe it's the night going into the 14th. Maybe that's what Bayom HaRishon. So it's possible, Rabos Leile Arboso Lebir. How do you know the chiyuv is only on the day of the 14th, going into the 15th? Maybe it's on the night of the 14th. So Gemara answers by Yom Ksiv. It says by Yom HaRishon. It doesn't say Laila, it says Yom. V'ema mitzafra, but maybe it means on the 14th in the morning. And here, the Gemara really needs to bring a proof that chametz becomes also midday on the 14th. Because if Bayom HaRishon means the 14th, then it might even mean the morning of the 14th. How do you know it means the afternoon of the 14th? And the Gemara answers, ach chilek. It says, ach Bayom HaRishon, and ach divides the day into two parts, and therefore it must be the middle of the day. Now, if you notice the language of the Braisa, da iskish hashbosa si'or le'achilas chametz, but actually, when we're talking about si'or lo yimotze mivateichem, we're talking about the lav of bal yimotze, we're not talking about the essay of tashbisu. Now, later on daf chav ches amid beis, there's going to be machlokes tanoim about what's called chametz kodem zmano. According to Rabbi Yehuda, chametz is also in a Torah be'achila from chatzos midday on Erev Pesach. According to Rabbi Shimon, the Torah does not prohibit chametz until nighttime. And if you like it, look at Tosus here on the top of Daf Hayam and Aleph, Dibra Masel Daha, Tosus says that we do not derive from this Hekesh of Hashbosa L'Achila that Chametz becomes Osir B'Achila Mishay Shosa L'Mala, just like he's obligated in Hashbosa, because the Hekesh is not Hashbosa V'Achila Zu L'Zu. It's only as far as Shivas Yimei Pesach, but not before Pesach. So Tosus then asks the Kasha, why don't we derive from this Hekesh, the Chi of Kares, for Bal Yimotze? We don't know that Bal Yimotze generates a Chi of Kares. That's not so. And Tosus leaves this as a Kasha. The Pnei Yoshua offers an answer to this question. He says it's impossible that there be Kares in Bal Yimotze because it's what's called a Lav She'en Bo Mais. And this is where we're going to stop here for today. We're up to debate Rabbi Shmuel Tana, which you'll see approximately, let's see how many lines down from the top. 10 lines down from the top.